Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Okay, hey folks, it's the Pro Wrestling Roundtable. I am your host, John Morgan Neal, and we welcome you once again to listen to us. As always, I'm joined by our producer and button pusher, the one and only Richard Yule, and our man from the WrestlingWithPopCulture.com, our bomb beyond, our reporter at large, one and only Jonathan Williams, and our irregular but always welcome partner, the one and only Jerry Chandler. And so we are going to talk about those moments of time in wrestling that you could look back on and you could say, what if a sea change, a milestone, a moment in time that if it had went another way, that it may have been completely different for this wrestler, or maybe even more than just one wrestler. It could have been a change of an entire company, a change of an entire territory, a group of wrestlers, or whatever, for good or ill. And that's what we're going to talk about. So sit back and listen.
10, 9, 8.
The White Rocket Podcast, hosted by Van Allen Plexico, covering the entire universe of popular culture, movies, TV, books, comics, music, and more, with interviews, convention panels, discussions about current and classical works, and much more. The White Rocket Podcast, it's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture.
Hey guys, it's Richard from the Pro Wrestling Roundtable, and I'm with Jonathan, and we wanted to mention something. We were trying to get a guest on to have a little interview for you guys, but he just circumstances came up, and we couldn't make it happen, but we wanted to give the dates, so Jonathan, I'll let you take over.
Yeah, well, it's the Southern Fried Game Room Expo, which is a really fun event here in the Atlanta area that I've been promoting and going to since the first year, which I think was, this is the fourth annual. So, but last year, so what it is, if the name doesn't give it away, it is a, it's basically a convention, just like a comic convention type thing, but the focus is arcade games mostly, but video games in general. And they have rooms filled with old arcade games and pinball machines, as well as, you know, new ones that they still make these things, believe it or not.
That's and, crazy to think.
So there'll be, you know, there'll be the video game manufacturers will have some of their new pinball machines and whatnot there for you to play. One really fun one a couple of years ago was a WWE one. I don't know if they put out a new one every year.
I seen that. I think it had Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant on the back.
No, this one was current people. It had John Cena and stuff. Oh. But I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they do, you know, a retro one and a contemporary one or something every year, or maybe that one was came out the year next year or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, last year they added wrestling to the event with a local promotion, Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment, which we've mentioned here and there on this podcast. So that's coming back again this year. So the event, well, the website is southernfriedgameroomexpo.com. The event is June 9th through 11th. And the wrestling is going to be two nights this year. and it's all tag team wrestling. It's basically a tag team tournament called Bobby and Stan's Most Excellent Tag Tournament. I guess the winner probably must get a trophy or something. But a lot of great local and regional talent will be there. AWE in general uses a lot of indie talent that a lot of times ends up on NXT or something shortly thereafter. So I'll be there. I'll be doing interviews with anybody I can. We were going to have Adrian Armour on, but like you said, that just didn't pan out. So I'll talk to him at the event, hopefully talk to some other people, and report on how it goes. And I guess that's it. You can go online and find it, and they've got Facebook events for it. And yeah, it's an overall, it's a fun thing for wrestling fans or non-wrestling fans, because it's, like I said, the focus is pinball and arcade games, many of which have nothing to do with wrestling.
Yeah, but, I mean, those things don't really exist anymore as far as, you know, like in the malls like they used to. So if you like that sort of thing, it'd be cool to go to and play a few.
Yeah, and it's not expensive to get in. It's $15 to $30 a day or like $65 for the whole weekend. And you get to play all the games you want. And when I've been, it hasn't been super crowded, you know, where not so much so that you don't get to play games. But that was always part of the arcade experience, is the popular games. You just got to kind of sit there and wait until somebody's lives, you know, runs out of lives or whatever.
Yeah.
But there's also live music and all kinds of stuff. So just wanted to let people know about it. It is an Atlanta event, but I think it's the type of thing that people might travel for, kind of like Dragon Con and things like that.
Yeah, I think there. I'm not 100% sure, but I think there's one in like a Nashville too, or in the Nashville area. I listened to another podcast, and I think that's where they're based out of, and I think they mentioned going to one. But maybe it's the same one. I can't remember. But, yeah, it sounds cool. If I wasn't working or so far away, I'd probably try to make it. But I can't wait to hear your report from it and see what kind of interviews you get for us.
All right.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Welcome back to another edition of 50 Shades Darker with Andre the Giant and Mae Young. Actual lines from the actual book. So you're my... Whoop! Messed up. So you're my boss now!
Technically, I'm your boss's boss's boss.
And technically, it's gross moral turpitude! The fact that I'm blanking my boss's boss's boss!
At the moment, you're arguing with him! There's something about your anesthesia that calls to me on some deep level that I don't understand. It's a silence call. I can't resist you, and I don't want to lose you. Don't run, please. Have a little faith in Andre the Giant. And a little patience, please. Sweet Jesus, you're wearing stockings.
You love strapping me in, don't you?
In any Andre, I do not feel very comfortable going along with this quote, but not super into it.
You're a pervert!
No.
You're my pervert! I don't know whether to worship at your feet or spank the living beep out of you! You're the only person I'd fly 3,000 miles to see! I thought I'd broken you!
Broken? Me? Oh, no, Anna. Just the opposite. You're my lifeline. Anastasia Steele, I love you. I want to let you some protection for the rest of my life, my man. Always share my life with me. Let me ask you something first. Do you want a regular vanilla relationship with no kinky poop? With no kinky poop at all? I'm not very comfortable with this.
I'm super comfortable with it! Kinky poopery! Kinky poopery!
I can't believe you said that.
What? I can't believe you said that! That's my line, Andre the Giant!
Well, I did. Answer me.
I like your kinky blueberry.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been 50 Shades Darker with Andre the Giant and Mae Young.
The Avengers Assemble podcast from White Rocket Entertainment. Creator and fan interviews and discussion about Marvel's Avengers comics, movies, and everything else. From Van Allen Plexico and the Jarvis Heads of AvengersAssemble.net, creators of the best-selling Assembled books and the most fanatical Avengers fans on the face of the earth.
As usual, when we do our roundtable and the pro wrestling roundtable, we have a subject that's so wide and so expansive and deep that we many, many times don't get around to covering it exhaustive enough. And our own Richard Yule neglected to bring up something last time, and he has requested this time to rectify that error. So, Richard, take it away.
Yeah, we don't often do this as far as mention the topic in the next show, but we completely did not mention Joey Styles, and I just feel that you know, his importance to ECW and the fact that he usually called that himself. You know, it was just him, and there aren't oftentimes a single person announcer that could actually carry the match. You know, he could pause when he knew when to pause. He talked when he talked, and everything he said was to build the match and the guys in the ring. And I just, and you know, he went on to WWF after the ECW One Night Stand. I believe he got a contract with WWE, and he was an announcer on Raw for a good while. And then I think he still works for WWE. At least
He got fired last year.
Oh, did he? Well, that's a
shame. Yeah, he was working for the website and working for the internet stuff, and then he was he did a interview, and he said something wrong in the interview that they didn't like, and they fired him. And then he went and called that one match for Gabe Sabolsky's group, and he made the Trump joke, and that caused a big stink there. So.
Well, that's unfortunate, because he's a really great announcer, and he's a good mind for the business. I mean, he's a Paul Heyman guy.
He is a Paul Heyman guy.
Makes sense that he's as good. So I just wanted to mention that, because
all. No, we didn't, and I'm glad that you did bring this up, because I'm a big fan of Joey. And one of the things I liked about Joey was that in a age, even then, in an age of where the announcers really started becoming very cookie cutter and didn't have the real personality or uniqueness, Joey was certainly unique. Joey was Joey, and there's nobody else like Joey. His delivery, his way of reacting to everything, so on and so forth. It's what I kind of was touching on when I mentioned, you know, like Gordon Solie and Lance Russell are two of the most revered of their day back in the day, but they couldn't have been more different if they tried. You know, they were completely different type of people and delivered everything differently, but they're just as respected and just as loved by the people that love them and respect them. So Joey's that type of guy too. Joey was 100% unique, and I did appreciate that.
Oh yeah, I mean, his catchphrase was great.
Oh my God!
Yeah, so
there was definitely something about him. You could see it go away a little bit in WWE, and I think that was because of the restrictions on the announcers. But there was one thing that I liked about Joey Styles so much throughout his ECW years and into the early WWE years. You could tell he was a fan, and he was having a ball. Yeah. So that came through, the enthusiasm came through so often. It didn't feel forced or fake. He was having a ball.
Yes, yes. And that's catching. And that's the reason why, you know, Gordon, you know, back in the day, even though he was a completely different personality than Joey, you could tell that Gordon gave a shit, you know, and that he treated it very seriously. And so thereby you, by osmosis, take it seriously yourself. Lance was just like this wonderful uncle, you know, that's taking you to the matches and he's telling you about everything, you know, and he's just so, you know, delightful and lovable. And Joey is just like the young brother that you're taking, and he's just the geek, and he knows everything, and he's super hyper about it, and so on and so forth. And another thing that Joey could do was that, you know, for a long time, Joey could carry it all by himself, which is not an easy thing to do. But I do say that as much as I did like Joey by himself, I love the team of Joey and Cyrus. Joey and Cyrus was a great freaking team.
Yeah, they were good on TNN when they moved them to there. Jonathan, do you have any thoughts on Joey Styles?
I didn't watch a lot of ECW in its prime, but obviously I've seen a lot of footage, in retrospect. And I agree that I'm surprised we didn't mention him last week, because I can't really think of anybody else that ever did it solo, right? He was pretty much the only one.
In modern day, now, you know, Gordon Soley did it solo, and Lance did it solo. All the guys back in the day did it solo. But yeah, in modern day, he was the only one, yeah.
Oh, really? Because
whenever
I saw Gordon Soley, he had somebody else.
Well, now, later he did. I mean, Roddy was added to him and so on and so forth. But for the most part, Gordon, more early, it got into the 80s. They started having it's in Florida. You had one guy, and then Roddy helped him there for a while. And Lance did get Dave Brown, so that's true. Lance had Dave Brown. But.
I enjoyed his work on the resurrected ECW, and actually, he was around that time. There was an event here in Atlanta at Center Stage that was called Joey Styles House of Hardcore or something like that. I forget. That may not be the exact name of it. And something like either the day of or the day before the event took place was when he signed with WWE when they decided to resurrect ECW. So very last minute, they changed the name of the event. He was no longer involved with it because he wasn't allowed to be. And it was kind of weird because, you know, there were a lot of speculation about what happened, and it kind of came about after the fact that was what happened.
Right.
But, so I was excited to see him live, and then I didn't get to, unfortunately.
So, yes. Good. Excellent. So, thank you, Richard, for bringing up Joey. Very big faux pas. So, if you're listening, Joey, and we're probably not, but if you're listening, we're sorry.
And come on the show.
And come on the show. I'd love to talk to you.
I did interview him to promote that event. I believe that's why I interviewed him. And he lived in Atlanta at the time. I don't know if he still does. But
how did he end up living in Atlanta, of all places?
I think he was working here somewhere after ECW folded. He got some regular job, and it was in Atlanta.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I'm starting to think all roads lead to Atlanta at this point, but
who's snacking?
I apologize. I'll mute my mic when I'm having to chew.
I figured it was you, John.
No, it wasn't me. No, but you still haven't answered my question, Jerry.
What?
What are you eating?
Fish and chips.
Oh, I had fish. I had catfish. So there you go.
I had salmon for dinner.
Well, Richard, what'd you have for dinner?
Subway.
Was it tuna fish?
It wasn't gross.
All right. See, you always screw everything up, Richard. We had it all done. We have J's. You got to be an R. We all eat fish. You got to eat whatever the hell it was you ate.
I wish my middle name was J, but it's not. I just go by that.
There you go.
All right, John, so you got a question you would like to present to all of us.
Question, yes, I have a question I wanted to go around the table. And then we also want to, before we get into our main subject, we will get a report from the one only Jonathan Williams of his live experience at SmackDown. Tuesday, yeah, 2 days ago. So, but before that, I have a question, a three-part question. There's three answers to the question from each person. I want to know, who was your absolute childhood favorite wrestler? The one person or team, could be a team, just as I'm a tag team guy, and I know other tag team guys, you know, you could like a tag team over a singles. So what team or personality was your absolute favorite and that you would have wanted to meet and that you cheered for and that you were the most interested in when you were a kid? And then if it's different, who it was when you were in your teenage, early college years? And if it's different, who it is now?
Well, I
can
think,
do that one easy.
All right, you go first, Jerry.
Tag team, as far as tag teams, I've said it before, it'd be a close toss-up between Rock and Roll and the Road Warriors, but I'd probably go with the Road Warriors because when I was a kid, I think I focused more on them because they had that really awesome look. I mean, particularly for a kid, they had that really awesome look, the face paint, the spikes. They're physically bigger than life. They came to the ring to Ozzy Osbourne's Iron Man. They usually beat the crap out of their opponents before Ozzy Osbourne was done.
That was Black Sabbath.
Well, yeah, Black Sabbath, sorry. But I'm so used to just saying Ozzy Osbourne now, you know.
Ozzy was part of it.
He was part of it. But they came to the ring to Iron Man, and they'd usually beaten the crap out of their opponent before, like, the first words were coming out of Ozzy's mouth. The Road Warriors when I was younger. Not college years, but I'll go with 20s, the Attitude Era.
Well, you don't get out of college until you're 22.
Yeah, but I'm saying late.
I gotcha.
For me, late 20s. Because my college years were done by, like, 91. So, right. Remember, I'm old.
Well, you don't know what old is, Pastor. Yeah. Roll on.
So I got to go with the Road Dogg and Billy Gunn.
New Age Outlaws.
Because there were a lot of tag teams in that era, and there were tag teams that were probably far better in the ring. Certainly guys like...
Well, they were certainly all better than Road Dogg.
Yeah, but certainly better than Harlem Heat. But, Harlem Heat's better than them technically, and they kept putting all sorts of tag teams together, but I always had fun watching them, right. And that was something important to me at the time. Was wrestling it had all the action, but it was fun, and those guys were always fun to watch. And these days, because I'm getting old and sentimental about things, and you know, crabbing about it was better back in my day, the Revival, because they remind me of so many of the just classic teams.
Awesome. Well, so all of yours were tag teams, you know, and none of them were singles.
Not really. I mean, like I...
Okay, that's great. I just wanted to clarify that. That's fine with me. That's awesome. Yeah,
no, like I said, back when I think we were talking the 80s or something.
Tag teams were king. That's
and you
very...
asked, you know, what are your memories of the 80s? I think my response was basically, you know, the Warriors...
Yep.
Road Warriors, Rock and Roll, and Horsemen, because tag teams were always bigger to me. I love single wrestlers, but no, my favorites have always been, my highlight memory favorites have always, that top of those lists have always been tag teams. I like single wrestlers, but I'm a tag team guy.
I'm with you. So, okay. Jonathan.
Well, I think I've said this many times. My all-time favorite was The Ultimate Warrior and still is.
Yep.
And the Road Warriors / Legion of Doom were pretty close. I mean, they were my favorite tag team of all time. And they're obviously for similar reasons. They're I like the face paint, the shoulder pads, and I guess the just the badass pageantry. I mean, that's always been probably my favorite part of wrestling, more so than even the what happens in the ring, is more so the personas and pageantry of it all.
Right.
And so for whatever reason, face paint and sometimes incoherent babbling and snarling and flexing has always been enjoyed. And then I guess more so in the, you say college years, I guess for
most teenage to college years. Basically what I mean there is, in many cases, not every case, but in many cases, when the child, you know, starts going through adolescence and so forth, tends to change his taste. He's a little more, and you know, to, you know, less things than he did was when he was a kid, and he tends to be, you know, kind of reject some of the stuff that he did as a kid. And in cases with a lot of wrestling fans, they tend to start to back the heels rather than the faces or whatever. And yeah, you know, and not every case is the same, but I'm just, that seems to be a demarcation mark for a lot of people.
Yeah, well, for me and probably most of us, I was that age during the Attitude Era and Monday Night War time frame, which, oddly, I didn't watch as much wrestling because I was in college and working full time, but I did keep up with it as best I could. And since Warrior kind of disappeared for the most part during that time period, Sting, who was always... Basically, Sting was my favorite WCW guy, and Warrior was my favorite WWF guy. So, right. Sting, you know, Sting went through that transition to the Crow persona, and yep. I really liked that. So, he was my favorite during that time.
And makes then, sense.
Since then, hard to say. I mean,
the best way, I think, for you to focus on the question is that, think about, is there somebody out there that jumps out to you, if you think about it, that you would want to really meet or buy a ticket to go see?
I'd probably say Dalton Castle.
There you go.
Who probably wouldn't be that difficult to meet, but I have not met him.
Well, like, it doesn't make a difference how difficult it is. It's just who you really want, you know, to experience.
Yeah, yeah. I mean...
And even if you experienced it before, that you really, really enjoyed it and would like to go back, you know, and see him again. That's what it means. That's what it is. That's what over is in what popularity is that, you know, that's the reason why, you know, I love that statement that that Al Snow said, that, you know, everybody always wants, you know, to say that, you know, about what the greatest match was at Wrestling 3, and they go off, you know, how good the match was. And, of course, everybody says Steamboat and Savage, but still the greatest match that night was Andre and Hogan, because that's what everybody will pay the ticket for.
Yeah,
and that's the difference. So, Richard.
Well, like Jonathan, I've mentioned mine a few times from my childhood, but it was hands down Bruce the Barber Beefcake, who I have recently acquired his Mattel action figure, so it's great as well. He's got the crazed look in his eyes, so it's always good. And so, yeah, I mean, I had a poster in my room of him. It's the famous yellow poster. It's probably 5 or 6 feet tall. But yeah, I was a huge Brutus the Barber Beefcake fan. I saw him live a few times, but I've never met him. But as a kid, I saw him live at a couple of Saturday Night Main Events. And I mean, the three people popped into my mind when you asked this right away. So it was Brutus, obviously. It might sound crazy, but China, I was a huge, huge China fan. That went along with DX, because Triple H and Shawn Michaels and China.
Groups, teams, whatever, DX,
yeah,
NWO, or whatever, that's fine.
That was my favorite time, you know, of DX. Like, I kind of rather like the three DX members than the, what, five that they ultimately had, five or six. But I mean, that was fine. But if I had my choice, I just like the, you know, the I'd rather be in China skits and the just all they were just really, you know, really inventive at that time.
My favorite one was the spit guards.
The spit guards was spectacular. Yeah, yeah. And then my third one kind of goes along with that, but right now I would love to meet Shawn Michaels. I would not probably like to meet him at that time, just because of where he was. I don't know if he would appreciate fans back then, but I feel like now he would probably be a much cooler guy to meet. And have stories. And he is, I mean, one of my, if not my favorite wrestler as far as a total package of wrestling, on the mic, just showmanship, everything. Hands down, Shawn Michaels is probably what I think.
Well, I certainly won't disagree with you about Shawn, but I need you to pick somebody that's an active wrestler.
That as an active wrestler?
Yes.
Finn Balor.
Okay, there you go.
I almost said Finn Balor.
Yeah, I think he'd be cool to meet.
I actually, in my head, because John threw out something that he didn't mention before, and it was someone you'd love to meet and talk to. And I actually was like, Finn Balor came to my head, but not for the reason that any of you would probably realize. Did you ever see the old NXT special they did on him before he won the title, the NXT title?
Yes.
What was his favorite pastime in between wrestling?
Oh, wow. I'm
trying to remember. His like favorite when he's in his hotel room or he's back in wherever he was living outside of the NXT.
Playing video games?
No.
No?
Legos.
Legos, that's right. Ha, 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 yeah, okay.
We would probably 10 minutes of wrestling, 2 hours of Legos.
There you go. Hey, that's cool. Okay, so mine are, it was a kid, it was Fritz Von Erich, but I mean, that is completely boring because everybody here in North Texas worshiped the ground that Fritz Von Erich stepped on. So, I mean, I was not at all different than everybody else. The only person that ever come close was Ivan Putski, because he was just so kid friendly, you know. His character at that time was just all about the kids and this, that, and the other. But Fritz was still the hero, and Red Bastien, who was just sort of the second top baby face for a long time there. Once I hit 15 years in high school, it was all about the Fabulous Freebirds. I became a heel back, and the Freebirds were my absolute favorite wrestlers. Piper was my favorite singles guy, but the Freebirds were my absolute favorite overall wrestling. Now, I got to say Bray Wyatt. And I could tell you why, because I do want to meet him. I do want to, because he's a fascinating individual. I was attracted to Bray the very first night I saw him on the old NXT game show thing. There was something about him right from the get-go, when he was still Husky Harris, that I said, I like this guy. I like this guy. And then I found out that he was, you know, Blackjack's, you know, grandson, and you know, Barry's nephew and IRS's son, and just the whole legacy of it. And I just loved the legacy of wrestling anyway. So that just all added to his appeal. And when he came out with this incredible character and then showed his incredible ability to deliver promos, I just immediately he became my most, the one that I'm interested in. And the reason I could tell you that he's the one I'm most interested in, because that's the one character that's pissing me off more than any other in all of that. Because the way that he is being booked, the way he's being treated and everything else, it pisses me off. more than any other freaking thing that's going on. So there you go.
Yeah, Bray would be a good one.
I mean, he's just, other than all the other stuff, but he's just, the interviews that I've seen him do, he's not really that far off of his character. He's not a cult leader, you know, weird or whatever, but he's a very deep, very odd person. Well, it goes back to what Jonathan said earlier about how wrestlers are odd. I mean, Al Snow in an interview was mentioning that, you know, one of the things that bugged him the most was the stereotype that people have that wrestlers are dumb. And he said, it's far true. Most wrestlers are very, very intelligent. They're just weird.
Yeah.
And they can't get regular jobs and they can't go 9-to-5 jobs or this, that, and the other. And so this is the lifestyle that, you know, that best suits them to be able to exhibit their intelligence and creativity and be able to not be completely answering to somebody else that can, so there you go. And Bray, perfect example of that. But he comes out honest. Bray does. So.
Jonathan, so we did a Patreon podcast the other night, and you were not able to attend because you were at SmackDown Live. So, what can you tell us about that? How was your experience?
Excuse me. Well, I don't think it's necessary to recap the event because
let's get the first important thing out of the way first. Did you get me Becky Lynch's number?
No, and I don't know if I would share it if I had it.
Not with John, because that would bring legal trouble.
But oh well,
all she has to do is beat me up.
The first thing that I thought was odd was the my girlfriend really likes Becky Lynch and Naomi.
Oh,
Naomi didn't even appear on the show, but she is their current champion, and they didn't have any Naomi merchandise, and I'm pretty sure there was no Becky Lynch merchandise either.
What?
There was plenty of John Cena and I think Roman Reigns and
why would they have Roman Reigns at freaking SmackDown?
Yeah, or John Cena, who wasn't even there.
Right.
So that was weird, yes. But. They did. There's plenty of that on their website. So
they can't tell me that those Feel the Glow shirts wouldn't sell.
Of course they would. And I mean, it's just weird. She's the women's champion, and there's no merch. At least the merch stand that I went to didn't have any. I don't know if they put different stuff at different stands, but.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, it was live, and so I'm not going to recap the results or anything like that. But it was the first time that I've been to SmackDown Live since 205 Live has been part of the same recording or whatever. Not record, well, yes, recording, but it airs. Both of them air live, one on USA, one on WWE Network. So there was the traditional dark match before SmackDown went live, which was Mojo Rawley, Harper, and Ty Dillinger against Aiden English and the Ascension. And all of the faces were extremely over. It was an odd assortment of people. Those people don't really make a lot of sense together. But it was a good match. And I still wish the Ascension was more than it is. Because they still look cool and they still, you know, fill that Road Warriors demolition type role.
But if they can do what they did with Jinder and do what they did with Breezango, I guess it isn't impossible.
Yeah, and Breezango got a huge response, and they were one of the highlights of the night. But the women's non-match thing was really good. I don't know how it came across on TV, but it was great, and I was hoping when I saw that it never became a match, I was like, oh, I hope they just turn this into a ladder match at Money in the Bank, which is what happened.
Yep.
So I'm looking forward to that. So 205 Live it's kind of weird. It happens after SmackDown ends, and they you know, for the live audience throughout the night, they mention the main event, which is another dark match, which this night was Randy Orton challenging Jinder Mahal for the title. But even with that match still pending, a lot of people left when 205 Live started. I don't know if they weren't paying attention and thought it was over or what happened, but you know, probably I'm not even going to speculate on how much percentage, but there were a lot of empty seats throughout the arena. And
don't these people know you ain't supposed to hinder gender?
Well, I think it's an unfortunate thing, but I think whatever they're doing with 205 Live right now isn't. There's something missing, because as much as I enjoy a lot of the matches, even friends of mine that have the network and that talk about wrestling, a lot of them are not watching 205, watching any of the WWE cruiserweights, unless it actually shows up on SmackDown or Raw or wherever these guys show up from time to time. It's like, unless they're there, they're not watching it. There's something there's some part of the puzzle they haven't figured out where it goes in place yet to hook a lot of the fans on the 205 yet.
Well, I don't have the network, so I've never seen both. Even when it's on Raw, for some reason, I have a hard time getting into it. And I'm a fan of a lot of those guys, especially Austin Aries. I enjoy him on there, but there's something about it. And I would compare that to, obviously, the former Cruiserweight division, but also, you know, X-Division and Ring of Honor and stuff like that, which I am a fan of. But I can't really put my finger on what it is that may kind of zone out when those matches are on TV.
I don't know. It's weird because that seems to be a very widespread problem, and it's kind of a mystery because lots of people have talked about it. You know, Dave Meltzer has talked about it, and they can't really put their finger on it either. But there is some kind of missing component, some missing element, because it, like I said, it's not like there isn't very talented people there. People that got following. You know, I love Neville. I love Austin Aries. I love Jack Gallagher.
I love Jack Gallagher.
You know, Jack Gallagher is funny because, you know, I like watching Neville, and because I just love the nasty heel thing that he's doing. But I'm more interested in when he's talking or, you know, doing, you know, nasty things necessarily than actual match. But Jack Gallagher, I love just watching him wrestle. I just really love watching him wrestle.
I love watching him just walk down the ramp.
Well, exactly. When Jack Gallagher goes on the television screen, I'm there. I'm clipped. I'm in. You know, but I can't say that for a lot of others. I don't have anything against T.J. Perkins, but you know, he doesn't have that same kind of effect on me by any means. So I don't know. It's an interesting thing. It's interesting because here, conversely, just a little bit so far that we've had with the UK stuff has completely pulled me in compared to the Cruiserweights.
Once again, much like SmackDown, one of the highlights of 205 Live was the, I guess this kind of goes back to our Joey Styles. At the beginning of the show, there was a cat fight between Alicia Fox and Sasha Banks.
Cool.
During the Noam Dar Rich Swann match. And that was
great. Can't fight!
Some weave got ripped out.
Oh, no!
A guy that I've mentioned a lot on this show, Corey Hollis, wrestled Cedric Alexander, which I'm pretty sure they have faced each other elsewhere before. But I think we should get Corey Hollis on the show sometime, because he's always, I think pretty much every time WWE comes to Atlanta, he gets some kind of match. sometimes under a different name. And his former tag team partner, John Skyler, has been doing really well in Ring of Honor in recent months. And so it was good to see him there again. And then the crowd was really into the end, which was setting up for the Neville Austin Aries match. But anyway, I guess Neville had tapped out to Austin Aries the previous night on Raw, which I still haven't seen, but the crowd definitely had, and they were chanting "You tapped out" full time.
Good.
So you know, there were parts of it the crowd got engaged in, but it just thinned out a lot. And then the main event dark match, which was supposed to be the championship, ended up the Singh brothers came out before it started, and it would be a non-title match. But the reaction to Jinder Mahal is great. I mean, the heel, you know, the...
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing.
Yes, it is. It's absolutely a good thing.
So, spoiler alert, Randy Orton won by disqualification because he hit an RKO and was about to pin Jinder Mahal, and the Singh brothers came in and prevented that from happening. So, yeah, he won, but even if it had been tag or a title match, he would not have won the title, obviously, for disqualification. So it was fun overall. Like I said, it was an interesting experience because it was the first time I've been to a 205 live event. So, yeah, that was that.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that report, Jonathan. Appreciate it very much. Glad you enjoyed it. It was a fun time.
The ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable proudly brings to you dramatic readings of pro wrestling promos.
The first thing I want to be done is to get that piece of crap out of my ring. Don't just get him out of the ring. Get him out of the WWF. Because I've proven, son, without a shadow of a doubt, you ain't got what it takes anymore. You sit there and you thump your Bible and you say your prayers, and it didn't get you anywhere. Talk about your Psalms. Talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says, I've just whipped your ass. All he's got to do is go buy him a cheap bottle of Thunderbird and try to dig back some of that courage he had in his prime. As the king of the ring, I'm serving notice to every one of the WWF superstars. I don't give a damn what they are. They're all on the list, and that is Stone Cold's list. And I am fixing to start running through all of them. As far as this championship match is considered, son, I don't give a damn if it's Davey Boy Smith or Shawn Michaels. Steve Austin's time has come. And when I get the shot, you're looking at the next WWF champion, and that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
And that concludes this edition of ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable's dramatic readings of pro wrestling promos.
All right, so here we are. We're going to talk about those moments and times when this might have happened, or this might not have happened, that things could have changed very drastically for good or ill for wrestlers or wrestling or territories or areas or just all kinds of different potential things that could have went one way or the other. So let's get started.
When I first kind of thought up this topic, immediately the one thing that came to mind was Stone Cold, his famous 3:16 speech. And I just wonder if they didn't give him that time if that character would have done what it did. Because it really did affect everything.
Actually, you could take that even back a little further. Because while certainly that moment was galvanizing, the fact that they didn't give him that time, even that night, at one point, it would have never been on the docket for him to have that moment. Because the person that was going to win, who was scheduled to win that tournament, was Triple H.
Until
he got in trouble for doing the curveball. And he's the one that took the punishment.
That's true. I forgot about that.
Or he could go back even further, and had he not been fired from WCW.
You took my number one.
Well, go ahead then.
Well, it wasn't so much fired. It was the bad thing that happened to him that turned out good involves the firing, but it was being injured and put on the shelf. Because if he wasn't injured and put on the shelf, they probably would have just, we'll run him lower mid-card for a while. And if you seriously think about the beginnings of the Attitude Era, if Stunning Steve Austin does not get fired, if Stunning Steve Austin does not go to ECW for a little while and then transition over to WWF and evolve into Stone Cold, you're still going to have The Rock and Triple H and DX and all these other things. But when you think back to that period, how instrumental, how big of a draw he was in that early period of the transition to the Attitude Era.
Conversely, I will say this. Well, actually, not conversely, along with that. Because one thing that I want to touch on that you mentioned was that the ECW stop was very, very instrumental to what we got originally with Stone Cold, because Steve has said himself that he opened himself up there, that Paul Heyman allowed him to really open up a whole new style of promo and character, and that was what gave him the confidence to be able to go on and do what he did with Stone Cold. And if he hadn't with the ECW and Paul hadn't opened that up with him, then that wouldn't have happened. Yeah. But on the other side of that token, if the Montreal Screwjob doesn't happen, if Vince McMahon or whoever was along with him that decided, hey, we need to put you on TV because everybody in wrestling hates your guts. They hate your guts. So we're going to turn you into a character, and we're going to have you completely shit all over our top face and keep messing with him and keep messing with him, because as important as Stone Cold is to that entire freaking huge spike in the Attitude Era, Vince McMahon's the other half of that equation.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it probably still would have popped against some other heel, but the heel for that to work was the Vince McMahon.
Yeah, and you only had the evil Mr. McMahon come out of Brett screwed Brett.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't think they would have ever thought to do it if it hadn't have been for that and then the backlash from everybody and everybody making a big deal about Vince and then people booing him there in the place, So, this is interesting. This is actually, I'm glad that Richard brought up this, because one of my favorite things is even on just world history is this sort of thing. This, what if this just had verged this way or that had gone this way, it's fascinating stuff.
What if Superman's pod landed in Russia?
That's been done.
Well, you also have to wonder if, had he not been let go from WCW, if some other circumstances would have come up that allowed him to develop that persona there, and then you would have had Stone Cold Steve Austin in WCW and The Rock in WWE or WWF.
Well, it would have been probably very different, but probably still big, because Ric Flair wanted him, was a big proponent of him to take his place as basically their staple champion.
Yeah.
Because he was a good worker. But then again, we know that Stone Cold injured himself, and so that's why he went for a change now when it became Stone Cold, it doesn't fit the character better anyway. But it was also not just for that. It was also because he couldn't work like he used to.
But the other thing with that also is he doesn't get injured. They don't decide to terminate him for being out all this time. He doesn't go anywhere for maybe a year, maybe 2 years. I don't think he becomes Stone Cold in WCW. I could see him eventually getting there, being kind of more himself turned up to 11 at some point or another. But it, you know, it's the same thing. You look at that period of WCW and you look back at all the guys who had everything they needed to become the next big star, but they kept hitting that, no, we've got Nash, we've got Hall, we've got Hogan, we've got this. You're the B team. You're not allowed to get big. Even if the fans are, you know, Jericho out there working his backside off and building up pretty much all on his own, you know, people wanting to see him in a major feud with even Goldberg just so that they could see Goldberg destroy him. And it's like, yeah, okay, you did a good job, but no, we're not doing that. You're not one of our big guys. And honestly, I don't know they wouldn't have done that to Steve Austin. He could have had everybody in the arena cheering him madly, and it would have been like, oh, well, yeah, everybody's cheering the West Texas Rednecks, but we want to promote these guys.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be from the front office to allow it to happen. Which, because, I mean, you could sit there and say, you know, another what if is that what if Bischoff had been smarter about the guy that he had on his roster, like Eddie Guerrero and Jericho and Chris Benoit and all these that and the other, and they didn't put that glass ceiling there, and they allowed them to rise up and start interacting, you know, in a meaningful way with the top stars and allow that progression, like eventually Vince did in WWF, how WCW might have lived longer and might have survived, because you would have had this, what WWF did. The one thing you could say about Vince and WWF is that sometimes they do it, you know, reluctantly, and sometimes they don't do it as efficiently as possible, but the WWF usually doesn't stagnate too much. They usually do bring in new talents and then move and things turn over. Probably the only one that has been Orton and Cena are I guess the anthemia to that, but for the most part there is this other changeover, and certainly the last 2 years there certainly has been.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that was more specifically, like, going back to the King of the Ring, just, you know, going with Jake the Snake as a religious character, and then Austin taking a pretty bold step to throw the Austin 316 in there, and that becoming one of the most sold wrestling shirts of all time, probably.
It absolutely is.
I think that was a big deal, because everybody was wearing this shirt. You could find it everywhere, and it was just more and more promotion for the company.
Honestly, it's what I call a perfect storm. All of the things that we talked about, all the elements that had to come together to make that moment possible, and then that moment happening, the match striking, and finally, you know, all that gasoline everywhere. And then, you know, and Michael Hayes is instrumental in that, because he's the one, because, you know, Stone Cold actually went to the hospital that night and come back. He was injured in a previous match. He had to go get sewed up and come back to do the finals. And Michael gave him a quick update and told him what Snake did, you know, what, you know, Bible verses and so on and so forth. And boom, that was it. That popped into Stone Cold's head. He knew exactly what he was going to say, the 316. And all of a sudden, all it did was just drop that match onto that freaking gasoline, and boom.
And you know something else that probably made that so big is that he said it basically just to say it. It wasn't manufactured.
No.
And it was one of those things. It came out and it caught on its own. It wasn't something they tried to push all night long.
Well, and also what helped is that Michael's reaction.
Oh, yeah.
And classic reaction. And Snake is walking back, limping back, defeated.
As he's walking. As he's
walking back. Yeah. All of that, I'm telling you, which is all a perfect storm. All of these things had to come together, but that moment had to happen. And Stone Cold made it happen in Kablooey. And became one of, if not the biggest, boom in wrestling history.
Oh, definitely. Jonathan, does anything stand out to you?
Yeah, well, this one was it was kind of funny for me because I didn't realize years later that I was actually at this episode of Nitro where this occurred. But for Christmas 1998, I got tickets to the very first Nitro of 1999 in the Georgia Dome, which was the Finger Poke of Doom episode. So I was there live. I couldn't hear the commentary. So, but I had my mom, or I may have just set the VCR to record. Anyway, I recorded it and then didn't get around to watching it until several years later. And then realized that was also the episode where Nitro gave away the results of the Raw of the WWF title match.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mick Foley, formerly
WWE. I'll put butts in seats.
Yeah. So basically that was the episode that won the Monday Night War. From then on, WWF won the ratings and WCW went gradually downhill. So that whole episode, or whatever you call it, that whole assortment of events on one night, I guess is what I'm bringing up. You know, it's not 1% or anything like that, but it definitely turned the tide in that, that whole era.
One day we will have to have a discussion about the Finger Poke of Doom because I have never got it. I have never got what the big stink about that is.
I read it
and actually I liked it and I mean I physically liked it on the when you posted it on the thing. I kind of also same lines, but you kind of went where I was thinking and so on and so forth because I'm a little more old school than you. It's just as old school as could be. I guess because I'm an older guy and I grew up with the territories, it's like it was just a collusion. I mean, what's the big freaking? It was two heels colluding with each other. It was one heel purposely. It was no different than when Andre handed it to DiBiase, you know, or there in Georgia when Zabisco or Tim Brooks gave it to Zabisco,
or the same era. WWF, it was a much lesser title in the view of most fans, but Sergeant Slaughter says, no, HBK, you will wrestle Triple H tonight. It's going to happen, and you will European title up, and you got a joke pantomime of a match, and HBK putting on the worst third grade acting job of crying in China's bosom and like chewing the scenery.
That's right.
And but fans loved it. It was, oh, it was, man, DX got one over on Sarge.
Now don't get me wrong. I don't think it was all the biggest problem I had with WCW. Then it was just the way they handled everything. But they actually had the two heels collude each other to get the title back on Hogan. Fine. But the title needed to be on Hogan. Because that was the money match, except for that's what we're talking about. WCW gave away the money match of Goldberg versus Hogan. So there you go. But, you know, that's the thing. If they'd handled it right, and don't get me wrong, the Mark should hate it. That's the whole point of it. They're heels and they're doing a thing. You know, and they should hate it, but it's the smarks that I don't get that have a big problem with it. It's like, that's part of the story. And then, but if you pay off on the story, if you want to gripe about the story not being paid off on, then yeah, we can talk. But about the thing itself, I don't get that at all.
Yeah, because go ahead.
It's kind of like what's going on right now with Jinder Mahal. Like,
yep.
People are outraged about it, and that's why I said that's a good thing, because that's
yes.
You want to get those kind of emotional reactions from wrestling fans, because that's the kind of thing you don't see as much anymore, because everybody sees it.
And maybe that's the trick. Maybe we finally get the fans on a more unified level, because you got the Marks hate it because he's, you know, the foreign heel and he's a jerk and he's a cheater and this, that, the other, but it's not somebody that's a favorite of the Smarks or the internet wrestling community. They boo him too, so he gets booed by everybody.
Yeah, you basically troll the internet Smarks.
There you go.
I mean, it worked with Daniel Bryan too.
That's true. So go Jinder.
Don't hinder the gender.
Don't hinder the gender. Jerry, you got one?
It's
too late.
It's not a great one. It's not a great one in that, unfortunately, it led to most of it was apparently a genetic condition, but I'm sure the pain pills that it led to an early demise. But honestly, as much as I loved Brian Pillman as Flying Brian, it probably the best thing that happened to him on a popularity level was having that serious accident and having to change his persona and his style so much.
I was always a Brian Pillman fan, but he was definitely one of those. It was kind of like, you know, yeah, I like watching him wrestle and, you know, and he's cool and all this and the other. But when he became the Loose Cannon, I became a huge fan.
Yeah. When he was Flying Brian and the face, you know, taking on Luger for the title, and when people talk about the first Nitro, the first thing out of my mouth is almost always not Luger showing up, not Hogan having a really bad match. It's Brian Pillman and Jushin Thunder Liger.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was the match that I associate with that. And mm-hmm. a lot of that was Brian. He was a good wrestler, but there was something about the babyface character. And even when he was running part of the Hollywood Blondes, you know, him and Steve had that beautiful chemistry, but there was still something not quite in there. And he was also still doing – Steve was the guy that was – the mat based, Brian was the aerial, and he brought a lot of spark to it. But I don't know what was completely missing. But when he started doing the Loose Cannon, and then he had to change his style because of the car accident right before he went to WWF, when he came back after that, and he's got the much more maniacal, mat based, vicious style, because he couldn't do the aerial stuff anymore, certainly not to the way he could. That, for whatever reason, for me and for a lot of other people, that clicked, that character with that style.
Absolutely.
That took him off like mad, it shot his popularity through the stratosphere. People loved to hate him so bad, and it was one of those unfortunate things that an accident that severe was what put some of the final pieces together. And like I said, it's really unfortunate that even though they officially said his cause of death was a genetic heart issue similar to his father, no, all the painkillers and everything that he had been taking could not have helped that any.
No.
So, but
no, not at all. But you know, you're right. But Gary, let me. Well, for one thing, I'll say that, you know, I'm not the action figure guy that Richard is, but I do have a few, and I always, I mean, when I find one that everyone wants one that I just have to have, and one of those was several years ago when I found the Loose Cannon Brian Pillman. figure. I had to have it, and it's one of my proud possessions to this day. With the leather jacket and everything. I'm molded. It's actual little leather jacket and stuff. Great. But, you know, here, how about chewing on this potential what if? What if both Stone Cold and Brian Pillman had reached sort of the changes that they eventually went through together as a tag team?
Oh, that would have been insane.
Yes, it would.
I don't know that you could have functioned with as a tag team for long, though. Because you would... that would be one of the few times I think people would actually... myself, I've complained that they, like, pull tag teams apart when they shouldn't.
Yeah.
But you know that if those two together as a tag team, as those personas, half the time people would be sitting there going, I want to see those two beat the crap out of each other.
And eventually, yeah, that would have to be that way. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I'm going to take my turn, and I was going to go to my usual go back to world class. I was going to talk about either the death of David Von Erich and the destruction of the Von Erichs, or the Gary Hart bringing Michael Hayes to Texas. Because one was, of course, obviously was bad. One was obviously good. If Michael Hayes and the Freebirds had not went to World Class, it wouldn't have popped as big as it did. It still would have been good, and it was doing good even before they got there, but it wouldn't have popped as big as it did. And if David hadn't have died, maybe things would have been different because he was there. I don't know. But I'm going to go with another one, and it's going to this one is bigger. Could very well have changed everything because of just the exodus that happened there, and WWE may not be what it is today. But what if Vern Gagne had been able to pull his head out of his ass and kept Hulk Hogan with AWA?
I mean, he probably would have eventually went, but at that time, it was probably very significant, I mean, of just what happened in the following of the 80s.
The thing is, though, that he may have eventually, it depends. If he had made Hogan more of a partner of AWA and gave him more profits and put him as the champion, then Hogan probably would have stayed loyal and he wouldn't have jumped ship unless he was just offered a ridiculous amount of money. But then, you know, could Vince had been able to pry him away if he was making, you know, whatever money, because AWA was doing well. I mean, AWA was huge. It was way bigger than the WWF at that time.
AWA was doing well, and also one of the bones of contention was Hogan's merchandise in AWA was doing extremely well.
Yep.
So
it was also he had New Japan stuff that was doing
incredible. Yeah, you combine AWA doing well, you combine that with the merchandise and doing the deal that he wanted rather than the deal that Vern wanted, and it's possible Vince can't woo him away for a while. And in all honesty, Hogan would have been big, and at some point I think Vince would have found somebody to fill a similar slot and be, you know, a big character for the WWF. But that's one of those lightning in a bottle things where if you don't have Hulk Hogan and Vince McMahon together in that right environment.
Well, it's just like I was talking about with the thing that Richard said with the 316. It was a lightning in a bottle situation. It was just a perfect storm of all the things lined up together. Because keep in mind that when Hulk left, it led to an exodus. If Hulk hadn't have left, would have Mean Gene left? Would Bobby have left? Would Body had left? Which Body had already left. But there's lots of others that left in his wake. Would they have left? All these big, huge stars. You know, most of the big, big stars that were in the early part of the Hulk Hogan era were AWA guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was still in AWA when he was in Rocky III, wasn't he?
Yes.
Well, wait a minute.
He was in between, maybe?
I think he was in the WWF, and then he ended up for a brief stint, but he ended up going back because he got into that argument. It was the argument with Vince Sr.
Yeah, Sr. That's right. That's right.
And it was that argument with Vince Sr. No, you're a wrestler. You're not a movie star. Yep. Well, Sylvester Stallone wants me to do this. Well, no, you choose. You go do that. You don't work for me.
That's right. So
he did that and then went back to AWA.
And there was a similar thing with Sergeant Slaughter, where
G.I. Joe thing.
When he was appearing in G.I. Joe cartoons, he was unsigned or something, I think, or something like that. It was a thing where WWF missed out on an opportunity to cash in on something.
I think it was another thing where, just exactly how Vern was trying to get into Hogan's pocket with his money he was making off his merchandise. I think it was Vince Jr. trying to get the G.I. Joe money.
Yeah.
Those promoters. I truly do believe that just like the Beatles, if John Lennon and Paul McCartney hadn't gotten together, it wouldn't have been the Beatles. Now, I think both of them could have been incredibly successful and big on their own. There's no question to me that Hulk Hogan was the future of wrestling at that point, and he was going to be huge no matter where he was at, AWA or WWE. And Vince was going to be successful to some degree or another from his ideas and in the way that he was going about it. But it was bigger with the two of them together. But Hogan, if Hogan could have kept AWA alive, there's no question in my mind.
Well, here's a weird one that I just thought of that springs off of yours out of the conversation we just had. What if Vince Sr. said, yeah, take 2 weeks off, go do the movie, then come back? Doesn't leave, and you've got a villain Hogan with Blassie as his manager.
Yep.
How does that change? I mean, eventually Vince Jr. takes over the company, and he might have tried to do something with Hogan, but it's not Hogan coming in after this absence, and now he's a face. It's, you know, we've got to change Hogan over somehow, and does that screw up the timing of fighting the Iranian heel?
Yep. What would have happened, if Vince Sr. had recognized what could have happened if he turned superstar Billy Graham face and kept him as his top champion, as, you know, proto Hulk Hogan, and instead of bringing in Bob Backlund, which wasn't as over a champion as Bruno or even Pedro. But Superstar was incredibly over. And that personality, that style, which everybody copied from Dusty Rhodes to Jesse the Body to Hulk Hogan, what that could have meant for WWF even long before Hogan ever showed up. Food for thought.
Yeah.
Earlier you had mentioned the Montreal Screwjob. And of course, that was on my list of things because that just spiraled. Of course, Mr. McMahon. But I think, in talking about the downer side of things, I think it affected Bret the Hitman Hart very negatively.
Oh yes.
I mean, because there's all sorts of things. Was it real? Was it scripted? Who knows? I mean, blah blah blah. But if you look at Bret's career after that, yeah, it is not good. It is not good. Ultimately, WCW didn't know what to do with him. It's really kind of a sad story. I mean, Bret was in WCW when Owen died.
Expanding on that, what if Vince had not kept his purse strings as tight and kept Bret and kept Nash and kept Hall?
Yeah.
What would that have changed?
Well, if they had kept Hall and Nash, it certainly would never have gotten to where it was with WCW. I mean, NWO would have never happened as big as it did. Because, I mean, we've talked about this before, where when Hall and Nash came in, people really thought that they were still working with WWF and that it was a true invasion. And it was all about how they talked. I mean, there was a lawsuit over it. And it was genius. The whole thing was. And so, without Hall and Nash leaving, NWO does not make the big wave that it did. Hogan turning heel. I mean, you can throw that in there. If Hogan didn't turn heel, that was huge. I bet Vince McMahon would have never thought Hogan would have been as huge of a heel as he was.
No.
I mean, you can correlate it to John Cena, as far as Vince doesn't see money as a heel in a heel Cena. And I mean, whether he's wrong, right, or wrong, or whatever about that, he was truly wrong about Hogan, because Hogan proved that he made a great babyface or a great heel in that moment.
Yeah, I think the one thing with if Vince isn't so tight with the money, WCW didn't know what to do with Brett, and that was obvious. Eric Bischoff knew what to do with Hall and Nash, and eventually with Hogan, depending on which of the 20,000 stories you hear as to how they finally settled on Hogan. But if Vince had kept Hall and Nash, I don't even want to think about the state of wrestling for the next 10 years, because there's nobody else that I can think of that Eric could have brought in. Not even some of the really big buzz ECW guys. And nobody else that I think he could have poached from WWF that would have brought the right attitude and swagger to the outsiders. You don't have a proper outsiders. You don't have a proper NWO. I don't think you have WCW take off anything like it did. It's still chugging along, doing the 2.3 and the 2.4s that it was doing with early Nitro. But if you don't have WCW take off like that, you don't have Vince finally get desperate enough to go, okay, we'll stop the cartoons. You guys want to try this? Fine, go try this. Oh, that worked. You guys want to try? Okay, yeah, we'll. All right, we're going for it now. You don't have him desperate enough to break out of that vision that he seemed intent on keeping in the early 90s. And I don't think you have the giant wrestling boom of the 1990s, because you don't have a WWF where they're going, oh yeah, let's go wild with Stone Cold. Let him just over the top, drink beer, flip the bird, do whatever, you know, cuss and shout, and, you know, let The Rock just full bore go over the top, and let DX get wild, and, you know, do the craziness with the Divas. It's not there, because all of that was out of Vince's the desperation of, man, we've got our back to the wall, we got to do something.
Very true.
And something on maybe a little less of a scale to get out of the WWF rate of things is, there's a ton of what ifs with TNA you could do. What if Dixie Carter never got involved? What if? But I think one of the ones that intrigues me the most is, what if Christian never went to TNA, because he never really was a star in WWE. And in TNA, he really was. I mean, he was the face of the company for many years and was used very well. Improved that he could be a star, but WWE for some reason never could grab a hold of that.
Yeah, I'm a huge Christian fan. I've said it before. I was a bigger fan of Christian than of Edge coming out of the breakup. I even put up with that god awful opera music walk down. you know, plug my fingers in my ears and just, you know. But
I'd forgotten about that.
Oh, your time has finally come. It's awful.
Yeah. But, man, but, yeah, unfortunately, I don't see them doing much with him. I don't know what it was, even after he came back from TNA.
Yeah, they like still buried him.
Vince, for whatever reason, never saw.
I really liked him as ECW champion, though.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, he was EC, and I loved him as ECW champion, and that should have told Vince something, but it never did.
It's one of those things, Vince gets turned on or turned off. I mean, he liked Christian, and so that's why Christian always had a place in the company, but he was never going to push him big because Vince made it very clear. I mean, they said it. Christian has joked about it more than once. He thought that Christian was ugly as sin. And that mattered to Vince. And so, and that's just one of those things. It's just this eternal prejudice in your mind. And it's like, well, I like him. He's all right. But, he's ugly as hell. I ain't pushing him that far. and I think, and the fact that Sami Zayn is probably the person on the roster now that looks the most like Christian, I think that's probably the problem with him.
Probably.
But
how the hell is Braun Strowman getting a push?
No, that's a monster.
Or Samoa Joe.
That's a different. Yeah. Those are big guys. They're not a,
I guess.
But, Christian, I love Christian. And you know what? Just real quick, another shout out if anybody here, another great podcast actually is the podcast of Awesomeness with Christian and
Ed. Yes.
And they just recently, they were talking to Kane. And not only am I a big fan of Christian in the ring and Christian is a character, I love the guy in real life because he is such a dick. And they were talking about how he was a dick to Kane for years. He was just doing these dickish things, and it's just funnier than hell them talking about it. And I recommend that. It's great comedy.
If nobody has anything else thrown on Christian, I actually have a TNA one that was on my list.
Okay.
Anybody doing more Christian?
No.
Okay. No, okay. Several years back, Dixie dislodges her head from her backside and doesn't short shrift AJ Styles.
Mm-hmm.
I think AJ Styles might still eventually make his way, maybe even roughly in the same time window, because it was only like a year or two. Maybe he makes roughly the same time window a year later, but it's one of those things. I've seen AJ in several interviews say he didn't go to the WWE before because he wasn't ready, which I disagreed with. I thought he was ready, but realistically, AJ Styles at the point in time when he left TNA and the AJ Styles that took on a few new elements to his character, his personality in Japan. I don't know if AJ Styles from that point in time in TNA is the same AJ Styles capable of being what he was the second he walked out at the Royal Rumble.
I think it took him leaving and going to New Japan and having a year or two, however long it was, maybe a couple years, kind of to build the confidence in himself too. And to really, really get to where he was.
Though I will say that his time working with Christian probably was the beginning of him being able to realize he could work as a heel. And that led to him getting better at it. And then Rick, working with Rick, and I think that helped a little. But then when he got loose and went to Japan, he really got better and better at it. And to where he has mastered it, I think.
Yeah, because even you look at some of the stuff that he did in his last 2 years in TNA, even up to the last 2 months in TNA, and you look at him halfway through his New Japan run and running with part of the Bullet Club, but running with the Bullet Club, and it's night and day. Even in how much he always had a natural level of charisma, and it was one of the things that helped keep him over even when his mic skills in TNA weren't the best.
Right.
But something clicked in Japan, and it was night and day from the last time you saw him in TNA to even his midway point in New Japan. Yeah.
Well, and I'm sure that has a lot to do with his guys he was working with. But yeah. One thing I will say real quick, because we're going to have to wrap up here, but is that I'm so happy that now that they've turned new face that they have not changed the character. He's still the arrogant little prick, AJ,
yeah.
And I love it. Just let the fans love him for it, and don't change it. Okay, so we could talk about this, you know, ad nauseum and on and on. This is fascinating as everything to me, and we will have to return to the subject again very near in the future. But before we sign off, I have sort of made a challenge and sort of promise that I would entertain everybody with a little snippet of a song.
Oh, no.
I am going to do my damnedest to sing the Honky Tonk Man song.
Let's talk about another what if.
All right. Well, that's it. That's the show, guys.
Oh, I got long sideburns and my hair slicked back. I'm going to do your town in my pink Cadillac. I'm just a honky tonk man.
Honky tonk man.
I'm just a honky tonk man.
Honky tonk man.
I'm just a honky tonk man. I'm cool. I'm cocky. I'm bad. I pick a mean guitar, wear blue suede shoes. You gotta hear me sing these snakeskin blues. I'm just a honky-tonk man.
He's a sexy boy.
I'm just a honky-tonk man.
He's the honky-tonk
man.
I'm just a honky-tonk man. I'm cool. I'm cocky. I'm bad. All right, there you go. That's it.
All right. Well, that was good. See? You want me to throw some music behind that?
Yes, of course. I tell you, I was a huge, huge honky. I still am a huge
honky-tonk man.
I don't know how many of you guys ever played D&D, but I was playing D&D pretty heavily at the time that, you know, around when Honky Tonk was the greatest intercontinental champion of all time. And I created a bard character based off Honky Tonk Man. So, there you go. That's how much I like it. Alright, that's it, folks. We're done. Join us next time, and we are always happy to hear feedback. Let us know if you like it, if you don't like it, what you do like, what you don't like, what you want more of. So we always like feedback, so do that, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
And next time, John sings HBK's theme song. Tune in.
Wow.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.